Beyond the center. Welcome to Beyond the Center. Short stories from beyond perceived reality. This is your narrator, Ross Fryer. The short story for this episode comes to us from author Millard Vern Gordon, a story which is entitled Sacnarth. The lights upon the morning star. How well he remembered that phrase. 20 years it must have been since Quaritch had whispered it to him. At the great trial where they had accused Quaritch of heeding the signals of the Evil One. As he had been led away, he had managed to whisper to young Sacnarth, then a mere neophyte, the strange phrase that had lingered, echoing and re-echoing through the young student's mind all these years. From neophyte to the master astrologer of the Imperial Observatory, it would be more than 40 years by the third planet's hurried pace. Did the light still glow upon the morning star? Sacnarth glanced over at the chronometer. It would be a half hour before the morning star rose. There was work to be done. He must prepare the day's horoscope. He laughed to himself. What fools priests and rulers must be to believe that the stars foretold the future. What an upset if they learned how it all originated in the minds of astrologers. No more the guesswork based upon a knowledge of the past. Well, so far, thought Sacnarth, my forecasts have been more or less true. Seating himself at a little desk in the shaded glow of an oil lamp, he proceeded to write his prophecies, taking care to befog them with an astrological formulae and mystic bosh. A half hour passed. Already, a dim light glowed deep in the eastern horizon. Now, from low in the sky, a blue star gleamed, a steady glowing mote of light heralding the dawn. The morning star. Sacnarth pushed back his stool from the desk and stood up. He glanced through the open panel at the planet, then over to the largest telescope in the observatory, a 20-inch reflector. He applied his single round eye to the eyepiece and gazed at Great Kurnal, largest of the inner planets. A crescent of brilliant light, the major part of it dark. It was nearing its closest, Sacnarth thought. The sun was behind it, and the night side was presented to Mars. The thin crescent glowed brightly. He could see dimly dark shading of land masses in that area, but the rest was dark, unlit. Sacnarth reflected. Here it was that Quaritch had seen his lights, in the dark of the earth. But then he was using a bigger instrument. He was using the great 50-inch reflector, largest ever made. That had been removed. The priest had said it was accursed of the devil, and they had taken it and placed it in the Hall of Evil Things. None were permitted to look through it. Sacnarth swore softly to himself. Oh, for a glimpse through it, for a single glance. The day was nearly over. Sacnarth had delivered his horoscope to the emperor and had served his moments at the court. Now he was wending his way homeward through the narrow streets of Lucas Phoenicus, he saw before him a great building, the Imperial Museum. Suddenly, a thought struck him. He would like to see Quaritch's telescope. Accordingly, he entered the vast institute. Through the long passages he went, past the exhibits of stuffed beasts and catalogued plants, and the many rooms of ancient empires and lost peoples. Through all these he went into the wing where lay the Hall of Evil Things. This was well guarded, he thought. Two helmeted and cuirassed soldiers stood before the entrance. Their single eyes gleamed suspiciously at all passers-by, their stumpy horns capped by dangerous-looking steel spikes, their hands resting upon huge maces at their sides. They halted Sacnarth as he sought to enter, but he showed them his credentials as a member of the Imperial Court and was permitted to pass. Down the hall he strode, past cases of forbidden books, evil robes, devil-haunted, and mummeries of all kinds, to the very end where, behind an iron railing, stood the telescope. The master astrologer leaned on the railing and stared at it. The huge mirror, kept in condition by the attendants, gleamed brilliantly. The great instrument at the end of the hall near the window, the eastern sky visible. The sun rose in sight of that window, and the morning star. From where the telescope stood, it should be possible to train it on the planet. The master astrologer became excited. He glanced around hurriedly for fear someone might have witnessed. Then carefully, he took in all details of the lay of the room, turned, and walked out. It was dark. A chill wind from the deserts swept through the deserted streets of the Martian capital. A period of deepest silence when even the eternal thumping of the canal pumps died down to a dull, distant hum. In the dim stretches of the hour before dawn, the city was at its quietest. On the street corners, a few sleepy guards leaned against walls and closed their single great eyes in rest for a moment. Down a side street in the darkest shadows slipped a figure, dark-cloaked, treading upon cushioned toes. It crept from building to building, keeping as much as possible in the recesses of arches of the little carved balconies Martian buildings are wont to have. Finally, the figure came to a halt in a doorway. It stood for a moment looking around to make sure of the place, and then, producing a long, thin instrument, picked the lock and rolled aside the door. Sacnarth stepped softly inside the dark hallway, rolled the door shut. He listened a moment, then, assured by silence, tiptoed forward up the incline that he knew lay to one side of the hall. Up he climbed. Reaching a floor, he turned quickly and groped for the next incline, reached it, and ascended again. Soon he came to where there were no more floors, and pushing aside a trap door, stepped out on the roof. It was not so dark up here. The dim lights of the two tiny moons added to the lights of the myriad stars to cast a misty white glow upon objects. The astrologer tiptoed silently across the roof onto an adjoining one. On he progressed to come finally to the great wall of a building looming up above. Set in this wall was a large window about 15 feet above his head. Sacnarth groped under his cloak, drew out a long, thin rope. To the end of this he fastened a small, strong double hook, making an effective grappling iron. He stepped back, whirled it around his head and tossed it upwards. It struck the wall just below the sill, bounded back. He waited and listened. No one had heard. Again he tossed the rope, and this time the hook caught in the carved decorations of the windowsill. Sacnarth pulled, the rope held. He whispered a short prayer, and grasping high on the rope, raised his feet off the ground. Immediately he swung inward to touch the wall with his feet. Then, slowly and laboriously, climbed up the rope. Reaching the sill, Sacnarth threw a leg over and lay quiet for a moment, still safe. He drew out his lockpicking instrument and easily opened the window enough to permit him to creep through and drop silently on the other side. The long hall was dark and quiet. No one had heard him. He looked up. There next to him loomed the great telescope. Sacnarth stepped over the railing and perched himself on the observer's seat. He polished the eyepiece fondly, grasped the hand wheels. Turning these, he swung the heavy instrument downwards, down till it faced the open window and the coming dawn. There, low in the heavens, hung the morning star. It glowed brightly and seemed to beckon and encourage him on. He set the readings on the clockwork adjustment, applied his eye to the lens. A brilliant crescent shining with the blue-green radiance of the third planet, much larger than ever the master astrologer had seen it. He stared eagerly at the now sharply outlined landmasses visible, noting the green color of some and wondering if it could be the green of vegetation. He drew his gaze from the bright crescent to stare at the dark portion. It was not truly dark. A dim gray light seemed to show up vague suggestions of continents and seas, the reflected light of Kernal's huge moon, he thought. But the lights. He must look for the lights. Long he stared, and suddenly he saw them. A tiny dot of white light glowing in the center of the dark disk. Now several others caught his view. His heart thumped wildly. The lights were there. Quaritch had spoken truthfully. He stared avidly at them. Cities, he thought. Could they be cities? He dismissed the thought as soon as it had come as being foolish. There were many. He tried to count them. Most were in the northern half, yet there were one or two in the southern zone, too. Many on top and a few below. A strange sense of having seen that design before entered his mind. The arrangement was peculiar. He studied it closely. The sign of Dallan! He recognized it. The ideograph of Dallan the prophet was exactly like that. The sign of Dallan on the face of Kernal. The prophecy. He remembered it from his student days. Dallan, one of the ancient founders of the priesthood, had declared, "Man shall be humble and bow down to the gods. He shall revere those who are their priests and prophets. He shall not deem to impose upon their domains and shall support and obey them. This shall be until the sign of Dallan shall appear on the face of the morning star. Then will man rise above the gods, and that time is never." The time had come. The priesthood should no longer enslave mankind. Now was learning and enlightenment to come to the people to give them conquest over fear and misery. And he, Sacnarth, must tell the multitudes. He continued thus in his reveries, his lone eye glued to the great instrument, his mind seething with a multitude of thoughts. A step sounded in the darkness. A hand was laid roughly upon his shoulder. He was jerked away from the eyepiece to face the two guards that had been patrolling the halls of the museum. Sacnarth opened his mouth. "I have seen on Kernal," he began, but a soldier clapped his hand over the astrologer's mouth and said gruffly,
"Silence! Let not your mouth tell of the blasphemies seen through this instrument of the devil."
They gagged Sacnarth and bound his hands and led him out of the hall, turned him over to imprisonment. His trial was short and speedy. During the entire proceedings, he remained gagged and bound so as to be unable to utter the blasphemies he might have seen. The priests passed quick judgment upon him, for had he not been caught peering through the accursed instrument? There was naught for such but execution. The guards led him out of the courtroom that morning and took him to a cell overlooking the place of execution. Here, for the first time, he was ungagged and unbound. The door rolled shut upon him and the locks clicked. Sacnarth gazed out of the barred window. The street was many feet below. He could not possibly shout down to the passers-by what he had learned. He looked wildly around him. On a little table was parchment and crayon. He grasped these and quickly drew a series of ideographs. He wrote furiously, for he had not much time. He wrote about the lights and the sign. He exhorted the reader to carry it to the astrologers and the men of learning. He declared the time had come to rise and strike for freedom. Rising, Sacnarth went over to the window, waiting. There were many going through the street below, but he waited for the best. There, a young man passing now. Upon his arm was the circle insignia of the Society of the One God. An intelligent look was in his eye. Sacnarth grasped the rolled manuscript and hurled it. Straight before the youth, it fell. The young man picked it up, drew aside into a doorway opposite to read it. Hopefully, the prisoner watched the expression on the youth's face, saw light spring into his eyes, saw a smile and a determined line spread over his face. The reader looked up. Straight into Sacnarth's eyes he gazed, then raised his hand in salute and hurried off down the street. The master astrologer sat down upon his stool, waiting for the executioners. He was ready to die now. He had done his work.
You've been listening to Sacnarth by Millard Verne Gordon.
This is Ross Fryer, narrator and producer of Beyond the Center. All stories featured on Beyond the Center are works in the public domain.